door, and he did the same back. As we held hands, my grip tightening more every second, I realized that soon I'd need to let go. I'd need to really let go. I looked into Aspen's eyes, and I could feel the tears threatening to come. How do I say goodbye to you? He ran his thumb over the back of my hand and placed it on my lap. He bent and kissed my hair.
Take it easy. I'll come check on you tomorrow.
After a quick tug of my ear at dinner, Maxon knew I would be waiting for him tonight. I sat in front of my mirror, wishing the minutes would move faster. Mary brushed the length of my hair, calmly humming to herself. I vaguely recognized the tune as something I once played at someone's wedding. When I'd gotten chosen for the selection, I'd wanted so badly to find my way back to that life. I wanted a world full of the music I'd always loved. But truly, that was never something I could have held on to. No matter which path I took in life now, music might only be something I pulled out at parties to entertain a guest, or a way I relaxed on a weekend. I looked at myself in the mirror, and realized I wasn't bitter about that, not like I thought I'd be. I'd miss it, but it was just a piece of who I was now, not everything I was. There were possibilities in front of me, no matter how the selection unfolded. I really was more than my cast. Maxon's light knock pulled me from my thoughts, and Mary answered the door.
Good evening, Maxon said to Mary as he entered, and she curtsied in response.
His eyes met mine briefly, and I wondered again if he could see how I felt about him, if it was as real to him as it was to me. Your Majesty, Mary greeted quietly. She was about to leave the room when Maxon held up a hand.
Forgive me, but could you tell me your name?
She stared at him for a moment, looked to me, and then focused on Maxon again. I'm Mary, Your Majesty.
Mary, and Anne, we met last night.
He gave her a small bow of his head.
And you?
Lucy? Her voice was small, but I could sense her joy in being acknowledged.
Excellent. Anne, Mary, and Lucy. Lovely to properly meet you. I'm sure Anne has filled you both in on last night, so you can serve Lady America the best way possible. I want to thank you for your dedication and discretion.
His eyes fell on each of them in turn.
I realize I've put you in a compromising position, and if anyone ever raises questions about what happened, feel free to send them directly to me. It was my decision, and you shouldn't be held responsible for any consequences that follow because of that.
Thank you, Your Majesty, Lucy said. I'd always sensed that my maids had a deep devotion to Maxon, but tonight I felt like it went beyond the typical obligation. It seemed to me in the past as if the highest level of loyalty was to the king, but now I wondered if that was true. More and more, I saw little things that made me think people preferred his son. Maybe I wasn't the only one who saw King Clarkson's methods as barbaric, his way of thinking cruel. Maybe the rebels weren't the only ones ready for Maxon. Perhaps there were others out there who were looking for more. My maids curtsied and left, leaving Maxon standing beside me. What was that about? Learning their names, I mean. He sighed.
Last night, when Officer Ledger said Anne's name, and I didn't know who he meant, it was embarrassing. Shouldn't I know the people who tend to you better than some random guard?
He's not that random. To be fair, the maids all gossip about the guards. It wouldn't surprise me if the guards did the same.
Still, they're with you every day. I should have known their names months ago.
I smiled at his reasoning and went to stand, though he looked uneasy about me moving at all. I'm fine, Maxon, I insisted, taking his outstretched hand.
You were shot last night, if I remember correctly. You can't blame me for worrying.
It wasn't like a real bullet wound. It only cut me.
All the same, I won't quickly forget the sound of your muffled screams as Anne sewed you back together. Come, you should be resting.
Maxon ushered me to the bed, and I crawled in. He tucked me under the covers before lying down on top of them himself, facing me. I waited for him to talk about everything that had happened, or to warn me of the coming fallout. But he didn't say anything. He lay there, brushing my hair back with his fingers, sometimes letting the tips linger on my cheek. It felt as if we were the whole world just then.
If something had happened.
But it didn't. Maxon rolled his eyes, his voice getting serious.
It most certainly did. You came home bleeding. We nearly lost you in the streets.
Look, I'm not upset with the choice I made, I said, trying to calm him. I wanted to go, to hear for myself. Besides, it's not as if I could have let you go without me.
I can't believe how unprepared we were, going out in a palace truck without more guards. And there are rebels just walking the streets. Since when are they not hiding? Where are they getting these guns? I feel clueless, helpless. I'm losing the country I love a little every day. I nearly lost you, and I...
Maxon stopped himself, his frustration fading into something new. He moved his hand back to my cheek.
Last night, you said something about love.
I looked down. I remember. I tried to contain my blush.
It's funny how you can think you've said something when you never really did.
I giggled, feeling that the words were coming in his very next breath.
It's also funny how you can think you've heard something when you didn't either, he said instead.
All the humor vanished from the moment. I know what you mean. I swallowed and watched as his hand moved from my cheek to lace his fingers through mine, knowing that he and I were both watching them. Maybe, for some people, it would be hard to confess that, like if they worried they might not make it to the end. He sighed.
Or it would be hard to say if you worried that someone might not want to make it to the end, maybe never quite gave up on someone else.
I shook my head. That's not...
Okay.
For everything we'd said in the safe room, for everything we'd confessed to each other, for everything that had firmly settled in my heart, these small words were the most frightening things to pass between us. Because once they were out there, we could never take them back. I didn't completely understand his reasons for hesitating, but I knew mine. If he ended up with Chris after I'd put my heart out there, I would be upset with him, but I would hate myself. It was a risk I was too frightened to take. The silence was making me uneasy, and when it became too much, I spoke. Maybe we could talk about this again when I'm feeling better? He sighed.
Of course. Completely thoughtless of me.
No. No, there's just something else I wanted to ask you about. There were bigger things than us to consider right now.
Go ahead.
I had thought about my guests for the upcoming tea party, but I would need your approval. He looked at me confused. And I want you to know everything I would intend to discuss with them. We might be breaking several laws, so I won't do it if you say not to. Intrigued, Maxon propped himself up on one arm to listen.
Tell me everything.
Chapter 17. The backdrop for our photos was plain and light blue. My maids put together a lovely dress for me, with little off-the-shoulder cuffs that just covered my scar. For now, my days of strapless gowns were gone. Though I looked pretty good, I was completely overshadowed by Nicoletta, and even Georgia was dazzling in her gown. Lady America, the woman next to the camera called. We remember Princess Nicoletta from when the women of the Italian royal family came to visit the palace. But who is your other guest? This is Georgia, a dear friend of mine, I replied sweetly. One of the things that I've learned from the selection so far is that moving forward means joining your life before coming to the palace with the future that lies in front of you. I'm hoping to make another step in joining those two worlds today. Some of those standing around let out satisfied noises as the cameras continued to capture the three of us. Excellent, ladies, the photographer said. You can go enjoy the party. We'll be taking some candid shots later. Sounds fun, I answered, motioning for my guests to come with me. Maxon had made it clear that of all days, today was one when I really needed to be on. I hoped to be the lead example of what an elite should be, but it was hard for me to try and be so perfect. Tone it down, America, or rainbows are going to shoot out of your eyes. I loved that even though our friendship was brief, Georgia could see right through my act. I laughed and Nicoletta joined in. She's right, you do seem a bit perky. I sighed with a smile.
Sorry, today is a high-stakes kind of day. Georgia put an arm on my shoulder as we walked deeper into the room. After everything you and Maxon have been through, I highly doubt he'll send you home over a tea party.
That's not exactly what I mean, but we'll have to talk about it later.
I turned to face them. Right now, it would be a huge help to me if we could mingle. Once things settle down, we need to have a pretty serious discussion.
Nicoletta looked over at Georgia, then back to me.
What kind of friend are you introducing me to here?
A valuable one, I swear. I'll explain later. For their part, Georgia and Nicoletta made me shine. As a princess, Nicoletta was quite possibly the best guest in the room, and I saw in Chris's eyes that she wished she had thought of that. Of course, she didn't have a direct line to Italian royalty like I did. Nicoletta herself had given me a phone number to contact her if I ever needed to. No one knew who Georgia was, but when they'd heard my line, the one Maxon had specifically fed me, about joining my past and my future, they thought that was a spectacular idea as well. Elise's choices were predictable. Powerful, but predictable. Two very distant cousins from New Asia, representing her ties to the leaders of the nation, paraded next to her in their traditional dresses. Chris had chosen a professor from the college her father worked at, and her mother. I was dreading my family hearing about that. When Mom or May realized they had a chance to be here, I was sure to get a very disappointed letter from them. Celeste, true to her word, brought full-fledged celebrities. Tessa Tamble, who had allegedly given a show at Celeste's last birthday party, was there in a very short but glamorous dress. Celeste's other guest was Kirsty Summer, another musician who was mostly known for her outlandish concerts, and her outfit was more like a costume. My guess was that it was either something she usually performed in, or an experiment in painted leather. Either way, I was surprised she got through the door, both because of the way she was dressed, and the fact that if you passed within a foot of her, you could smell the alcohol radiating off her.
Nicoletta, Queen Amberley said, approaching us, how wonderful to see you again.
They exchanged kisses on both cheeks before Nicoletta spoke.
The joy is all mine. I was elated when I received America's invitation. We all had such a wonderful time on our last visit.
I'm glad to hear that, the Queen commented. I'm afraid it's going to be a bit calmer today.
I don't know, Nicoletta countered, pointing over to where Kirsty and Tessa were standing in a corner and talking loudly. I'm betting those two will send me home with at least one story.
We all laughed, though I could see a little anxiety in the Queen's eyes. I suppose I should go introduce myself. Always the picture of bravery, I joked. She smiled. Please relax and enjoy yourselves. I hope you get to meet some new acquaintances, but honestly, just take some time together with your friends. I nodded, and Queen Amberley left to meet Celeste's guests. Tessa was looking fine, but Kirsty appeared to be picking up and smelling every finger sandwich on a nearby table. I made a mental note not to eat anything near where she'd been standing. I surveyed the room. Everyone seemed busy eating or talking, so I decided now was as good a time as any. Follow me, I said, heading to a small table in the back. We sat, and a maid brought us tea. Once we were alone, I dived in, hoping this would go smoothly. Georgia, first, I haven't had a chance to apologize about Micah. She was shaking her head even as I spoke. He always wanted to be a hero. We all accept that things might end like that, but I think he was proud. I'm still really sorry. Is there anything we can do?
No, everything's taken care of. Trust me, he wouldn't have chosen a different end, she insisted.
I thought of the mouse-like boy in the corner of the room that night. He willingly ran out into the fray for me, for all of us. Bravery hides in amazing places. I turned back to the matter at hand.
Well, Georgia, as you can see, Nicoletta is the princess of Italy. She visited with us a few weeks ago.
I looked between them. At that time, she made it clear that Italy would like to be an ally to Ilia if certain things changed.
America, Nicoletta hissed.
I held up a hand. Trust me, Georgia here is a friend,
but I don't know her from Carolina. She's one of the leaders of the Northern Rebels.
Nicoletta sat up in her seat. Georgia gave her a timid nod, confirming what I'd said.
She came to our aid recently, and lost someone close to her in the process, I explained.
Nicoletta placed her hand on Georgia's.
I'm sorry.
Then she turned to me, curious as to how all this tied together.
What we say needs to stay among us, but I thought we might be able to talk about some things that would benefit everyone here, I explained.
Are you trying to overthrow the king? Nicoletta asked.
No, Georgia assured her. We're hoping to align ourselves with Maxon's reign and work toward eliminating the castes, maybe within his lifetime. He seems to have more compassion for his people.
He does, I added.
Then why do you attack the palace and all those people? Nicoletta accused sharply.
I shook my head. They're not like the southern rebels. They don't kill people. They sometimes deliver justice that they see as fit.
We've gotten unwed mothers out of jail, things like that, Georgia interjected.
They have broken into the palace, but never with the intent to kill, I added.
Nicoletta sighed. I'm not so bothered by that, but I'm not sure why you need me to know them.
Neither am I, Georgia confessed.
I took a breath. The southern rebels are getting more and more aggressive. In the last few months alone, their attacks have increased, not just at the palace but across the country. They're merciless. I worry, as does Maxon, that they're very close to making a move we won't be able to recover from. Their idea of killing their way down the elite's castes is pretty drastic, and we're all afraid those attacks are going to escalate.
They already have, Georgia said, more to me than to Nicoletta. When you invited me here, I was happy, if only to be able to give you more news. The southern rebels have moved to the Threes.
I placed a hand over my mouth, shocked that they were progressing so quickly.
Are you sure?
Positive, Georgia confirmed.
The numbers shifted yesterday.
After a moment of quiet worry, Nicoletta spoke.
Why are they doing this?
Georgia turned to her.
To scare the elite into leaving, to scare the royal family in general. It seems like they think that if they can stop the selection from finishing and isolate Maxon, they'll only have to get rid of him in order to take over.
And that's the real worry. If they come to power, there's nothing for Maxon to offer you as king. The southern rebels would only oppress people further.
So what do you propose? Nicoletta asked.
I tried to walk lightly into the criminal territory in front of me.
Georgia and the other northerners have a better opportunity to stop the southern rebels than any of us in the palace. They can see their moves more easily and have had chances to confront them, but they're untrained and unarmed.
They both waited, not seeing what I was implying.
I lowered my voice.
Maxon can't siphon money from the palace to help them buy weapons.
I see, Nicoletta finally said.
It would be under the full understanding that these weapons would only be used to stop the southerners. Never against an officer of any government-issued position, I said, looking at Georgia.
That wouldn't be a problem.
I saw in her eyes how much she meant that, and I already knew it in my own heart. If she'd wanted to, she could have taken me out when she found me in the woods, or chosen not to come running into the alley after us. But that was never her goal.
Nicoletta was strumming her fingers across her lips, thinking.
I knew we were asking a lot, but I wasn't sure how to move forward otherwise.
If anyone found out, she said.
I know. I've thought about that.
If the king ever knew, a caning wouldn't be enough where I was concerned.
If we could make sure there isn't a trail.
Nicoletta kept fidgeting her fingers near her mouth.
It would need to be cash, at least. That makes it harder, Georgia offered.
Nicoletta nodded and dropped her hand to the table.
I said if I could do anything for you, I would. We could use a strong friend, and if your country is lost, I fear we would only gain another enemy.
I gave her a sad smile.
She turned to Georgia. I can get the cash today, but it would need to be converted.
Georgia smiled.
We have means.
Over her shoulder, I saw a photographer approaching. I picked up my teacup and whispered,
Camera! And I've always thought America was a lady. I think sometimes we miss those traits because we see fives as performers and sixes as housekeepers. But look at Queen Amberlee. She's so much more than a four, Georgia said kindly. Nicoletta and I both nodded. She's an incredible woman. It's been a privilege to live with her, I shared. Maybe you'll get to stay with her, Nicoletta said with a wink. Smile, ladies, the photographer instructed, and we all showed our brightest faces, hoping to cover our dangerous secret. Chapter 18. The day after Nicoletta and Georgia left, I caught myself looking over my shoulder a lot. I was sure someone knew what I'd said, what I'd handed over to the rebels in a brief afternoon. I kept reminding myself that if anyone had overheard, I certainly would have been arrested by now. Seeing as I was still enjoying a wonderful breakfast with the other elite and the royal family, I had to believe that everything was fine. Besides, Maxon would defend me if he had to. After breakfast, I went back to my room to touch up my makeup. While I was in the bathroom sweeping on another layer of lipstick, a knock sounded at the door. It was just Lucy and me, and she went to see who it was while I finished up. A minute later, she popped her head around the corner. "It's Prince Maxon," she whispered. I whipped my head around. "He's here?" She nodded, beaming. "He remembered my name." "Of course he did," I replied with a smile. I put everything down and ran my fingers through my hair. "Lead me out, then leave quietly." "As you wish, miss." Maxon was standing tentatively by the door, uncharacteristically waiting for an invitation to enter. He held a small, thin box, and he drummed his fingers against it, fidgeting.
"Sorry to interrupt. I was wondering if I could have a moment."
"Of course," I said, walking over. "Please come in." Maxon and I perched on the edge of my bed.
"I wanted to see you first," he said, getting situated. "I wanted to explain before the others came in bragging."
Explain? For some reason, his words put me on edge. If the others were bragging, I was about to be excluded from something. "What do you mean?" I realized I was biting my freshly glossed lip. Maxon passed the box over to me.
"I'll clarify, I promise. But first, this is for you."
I took the box and unhooked a small button in the front so I could open it. I think I inhaled every millimeter of air in the room. Resting inside the box were a breathtaking set of earrings and matching bracelet. They coordinated beautifully, with blue and green gems woven into a subtle floral design. "Maxon, I love it, but I can't possibly take this. It's too...
"On the contrary, you must take them. It's a gift, and it's tradition that you wear them in the convicting."
"The what?" He shook his head.
"Sylvia will explain all that, but the point is, it's tradition for the prince to present the elite with jewelry, and for them to wear the pieces to the ceremony. There will be quite a few officials there, and you need to look your best. And unlike the things you've been presented with so far, these are all real and yours to keep."
I smiled. Of course we wouldn't have been given real jewelry to wear until now. I wondered how many girls had taken things home, thinking that if they hadn't gotten Maxon, at least they got a few thousand in jewelry. "They're wonderful, Maxon. Just my taste, thank you." Maxon raised a finger.
"You're welcome. And that's part of what I want to discuss. I chose the gifts for each of you personally, and intended that they should all be equal. However, you prefer to wear the necklace from your father, and I'm sure it would be a comfort to you in the middle of something as big as the convicting. So while the others got necklaces, you have a bracelet."
He reached over to my hand and lifted it.
"And I see you're attached to your little button, and I'm glad you still like the bracelet I brought back from New Asia, but they really aren't appropriate. Try this on so we can see how it rests."
I took off Maxon's bracelet and set it on the edge of my nightstand. But I took Aspen's button and set it in my jar with its single penny. It seemed like it should be there for now. I turned back and caught Maxon staring at the jar, something hard in his eyes. It disappeared swiftly enough, and he went to removing the bracelet from the box. His fingers tickled my skin, and when he moved away, I nearly gasped again at how beautiful his gift was. "It really is perfect, Maxon."
"I hoped you'd think so. but that is precisely why I needed to talk to you. I set out to spend the same amount on all of you. I wanted to be fair.
I nodded. That sounded reasonable.
The problem with that being, your tastes are much simpler than the others, and you have a bracelet as opposed to a necklace. I ended up spending half as much on you as the rest, and I wanted you to know that before you saw what I gave them. And I wanted you to know that it came from wanting to give you what I felt you would like the best, not because of your place or anything like that.
Maxon's face was so sincere. Thank you, Maxon. I wouldn't have had it any other way, I said, placing a hand on his arm. As always, he seemed so happy to be touched.
I suspected as much, though thank you for saying so. I was afraid I might hurt you.
Not at all. Maxon's smile grew.
Of course, I still wanted to be fair, so I had a thought.
He reached into his pocket and pulled out a thin envelope.
Perhaps you would like to send the difference to your family.
I stared at the envelope. Are you serious?
Of course. I want to be impartial, and I thought this would be the best way to handle the discrepancy. And I hoped it would make you happy.
He placed the envelope in my hands, and I took it, still shocked. You didn't have to do that.
I know, but sometimes it's about what you want to do, not what you have to.
Our eyes met, and I realized that he did a lot for me out of simply wanting to, giving me pants when I wasn't allowed to wear them, bringing me a bracelet from the other side of the world. Surely he loved me, right? Why wouldn't he just say it? We're alone, Maxon. If you say it, I'll say it back. Nothing. I don't know how to thank you for this, Maxon. He smiled.
Hearing you say it is nice.
He cleared his throat.
I'm always interested in hearing how you feel.
Oh, no. Nope, I was not putting it out there first. Well, I'm very grateful, as always. Maxon sighed.
I'm happy you like it.
Unsatisfied, he took to watching the carpet.
I need to go. I still have to deliver the gifts to the others.
We stood together, and I escorted him to the door. As he left, he turned and kissed my hand. With a friendly nod of his head, he disappeared around the corner to visit the others. I walked back to the bed and looked again at my gifts. I couldn't believe that something this beautiful was mine to keep forever. I vowed to myself that even if I went home and all the money ran out and my family was absolutely destitute, I would never sell these or give them away, or the bracelet he'd gotten me in New Asia. I would hold on to them no matter what.
The convicting is simple enough, Sylvia said to us the next afternoon as we followed her to the great room. It's one of those things that sounds much more challenging than it is, but above all, it's symbolic. It will be a grand event. There will be several magistrates here, not to mention the extended members of the royal family, and enough cameras to make your heads spin, Sylvia barked over her shoulder. So far, this was sounding anything but simple. We rounded the corner and Sylvia flung open the doors to the great room. In the middle of the space was Queen Amberlee herself, giving instructions to men setting up rows of stadium seats. In another corner, someone was debating which carpet to roll out, and two florists were discussing which blossoms would be most appropriate. They apparently didn't think the Christmas decorations should stay. So much was happening, I almost forgot Christmas was coming at all. Toward the back of the room, a stage was set up with stairs across the front of it, and three massive thrones were centered on the platform. To our right were four small stages with lone seats on them, looking beautiful but also very isolating. Those alone were enough to decorate the room, and I couldn't imagine how it would look once everything was in place.
Your Majesty, Sylvia said with a curtsy, and we all followed suit.
The Queen walked over to us, her face lit up with a smile.
Hello, ladies, she said. Sylvia, how far have you gotten?
Not far at all, Majesty.
Excellent. Ladies, let me enlighten you about your next task in the selection process.
She motioned for us to follow her inside the great room.
The convicting is meant to be a symbol of your submission to the law. One of you will become the new princess, and someday queen. The law is how we live, and it will be your duty not only to live by it, but to uphold it. And so, she said, stopping and facing us,
You will start with the convicting. A man who has committed a crime, most likely a theft, will be brought in. These are cases that are worthy of a whipping, but these men will spend time in jail instead, and you will send them there. The Queen smiled at our bewildered expressions. I know it sounds harsh, but it's not. These men have each committed a crime, and instead of facing the difficulties of a physical punishment, they'll be paying their debts with time. You've seen firsthand how painful a caning can be. Being whipped isn't much better. You're doing them a favor, she said encouragingly. I still didn't feel good about it. Those who stole were penniless. Twos and threes who broke laws paid their way out of punishment with money. The poor paid their way in flesh or time. I remembered Jemmy, Aspen's younger brother, leaning over a block while men took a handful of food out of his back in lashes. While I hated that, it was better than locking him away. The ledgers needed him to work, young as he was, and it seemed that once you got above a 5, people forgot that. Sylvia and Queen Amberley walked us through the ceremony over and over until our lines were perfect. I tried to deliver mine with the grace that Elise or Chris had, but they came out sounding flat every time. I did not want to put a man in jail. When we were dismissed, the other girls headed to the door together, but I went to the Queen. She was finishing a conversation with Sylvia. I should have used that time to come up with something more eloquent. Instead, when Sylvia walked away and the Queen addressed me, I just blurted it out. Please, don't make me do this, I pleaded. I beg your pardon? I can submit to the law, I swear. It's not that I'm trying to be difficult, but I can't put a man in jail. He didn't do anything to me. Her expression was kind as she reached to touch my face. But he did, dear girl. If you became the princess, you'd be the embodiment of the law. When someone breaks the smallest rule, they stab you. The only way to keep from bleeding out is to take a stand against those who have already harmed you so that others will not be so brazen. But I'm not the princess, I implored. No one's hurting me. She smiled and lowered her head to mine, whispering, You're not the princess today, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was a temporary issue. Queen Amberley stepped back and winked. I sighed, getting desperate. Bring me someone else, not some petty thief who probably only stole because they were hungry. Her face stiffened. I'm not suggesting it's okay to steal, I know it's not, but bring me someone who did something really bad. Bring me the person who killed the guard that got Maxon and me into a safe room the last time the rebels came. That person should be locked up forever. And I'll say that happily. But I can't do this to some hungry 7. I can't. I could see she wanted to be gentle with me, but I could also see she wouldn't budge on this. Allow me to be very blunt with you, Lady America. Of all the girls, you need to do this the most. People have seen you run to stop a caning, suggest undoing the casts on national television, and encourage people to fight when their lives are in serious danger. Her kind face was serious. I'm not saying those were bad things, but they have given most people the impression that you run wild. I fidgeted with my hands, knowing this was going to end with me doing the convicting, no matter what I said. If you want to stay, if you care about Maxon, she paused, giving me a moment to consider, then you need to do this. You need to show you have the ability to be obedient. I do. I just don't want to put someone in jail. That's not a princess's job. Magistrates do that. Queen Amberley patted my shoulder. You can do it, and you will. If you want Maxon at all, you need to be perfect. I'm sure you understand that there's opposition where you're concerned. I nodded. Then do it. She walked away, leaving me alone in the great room. I went up to my seat, practically a throne itself, and mumbled the lines again. I tried to tell myself that it wasn't a big deal. People broke laws and went to jail all the time. It was one person out of thousands, and I needed to be perfect. Perfect was my only option. Chapter 19. The day of the convicting, I was a bundle of nerves. I was afraid I'd trip or forget what to say. Even worse, I was afraid I'd fail.
The one thing I didn't have to worry about was my clothes. My maids had to confer with the head dresser to make something suitable for me, though I wouldn't use a word as plain as suitable to describe it. Following again on tradition, the dresses were all white and gold. Mine had a high waist and no strap on the left, but did have a small off-the-shoulder strap on the right, covering my scar and looking really lovely at the same time. The top was snug, but the skirt was billowing, kissing the floor with scallops of golden lace. It came together with pleats in the back that fell behind me in a short train. When I looked at myself in the mirror, it was the first time I actually thought I looked like a princess. Anne grabbed the olive branch I was meant to carry and situated it in my arm. We were supposed to place the branches at the foot of the king as a sign of peace toward our leader and our willingness to yield to the law.
"You look beautiful, miss," Lucy said. I couldn't help but notice how calm and confident she seemed lately. I smiled. "Thank you. I wish you were all going to be there," I said.
"Me too," Mary sighed. Ever proper, Anne turned the focus back in my direction. "Don't you worry, miss, you'll do perfectly, and we'll be watching with the other maids."
"You will?"
That was encouraging, even though they wouldn't be downstairs.
"We wouldn't miss it," Lucy assured me.
A sharp knocking snapped us from our conversation. Mary opened the door, and I was happy to see it was Aspen.
"I'm here to escort you to the convicting, Lady America," he said.
Lucy piped up. "What do you think of our handiwork, Officer Ledger?" He smiled slyly.
"You've outdone yourselves."
Lucy giggled, and Anne quietly shushed her as she made final adjustments to my hair. Now that I knew about Anne's feelings for Aspen, it was obvious how perfect she tried to be in front of him. I took a deep breath, remembering the masses waiting for me downstairs.
"Ready?"
he asked. I nodded, readjusted my branch, and went to the door, peeking back just once to see my maid's happy faces. I looped my arm through Aspen's and headed with him down the hall.
"How have you been?" I asked casually.
"I can't believe you're going through with this,"
he shot back. I swallowed, immediately nervous again. "I don't have a choice."
"You always have a choice, Mayor."
"Aspen, you know I don't like this, but in the end it's only one person, and he's guilty."
"Just like the rebel sympathizers that the king demoted a caste. Just like Marley and Carter."
I didn't have to look up to see how disgusted he was. "That was different," I mumbled, not sounding convincing at all. Aspen stopped dead in his tracks and forced me to look at him.
"It's never different with him."
His tone was so serious. Aspen knew more than most people did because he'd stood guard during meetings or delivered orders himself. He was holding a secret right now. "Are they thieves at all?" I asked quietly as we continued to move.
"Yes, but nothing deserving the years of jail they'll receive today. And it's going to be a pretty loud message to their friends."
"What do you mean?"
"They're people who have gotten in his way, Mayor. Rebel sympathizers. Men a bit too outspoken about what a tyrant he is. This is being broadcast everywhere. The people they've tried to sway will see this, will warn others about what happens to those who attempt to go against the king. This is deliberate."
I whipped my arm from his, hissing my words at him. "You've been here almost as long as I have. In all that time, did you ever not deliver one of the sentences you were ordered to?"
He considered. "No, but..."
"Then don't judge me. If he's not above putting his enemies in prison without real cause, what do you think he'll do to me? He hates me."
Aspen's eyes were pleading. "Mayor, I know it's scary, but you've..."
I put up my hand.
"Do your job. Take me downstairs."
He swallowed once, turned forward, and put his arm out for me. I gripped it, and we walked on in silence. Halfway down the stairs, as the buzz of conversation started to reach us, he spoke up again.
"I always wondered if they'd change you."
I didn't respond. What could I say, anyway? In the grand foyer, the other girls were staring into the distance, quietly moving their lips as they recited their lines. I detached myself from Aspen and moved to join them. Elise had talked about her dress so much, I felt as if I'd already seen it.
Gold and cream were woven together in a slim, sleeveless design, and her golden gloves looked dramatic. Her gifts from Maxon were deep, dark gems, and they made her slick hair and dark eyes pop. Chris once again managed to be the embodiment of all things royal, and it was like she wasn't even trying. Her dress was fitted through the waist and burst out like a flower blossoming toward the ground. And Maxon's necklace and earrings for her were iridescent, gently rounded, and perfect. It did for a moment make me sad that mine were so simple. Celeste's dress, well, it would certainly be unforgettable. Her neckline was plunging, and it seemed a little inappropriate for the occasion. She caught me staring and pushed her lips together and shook her shoulders at me. I laughed once and put my hand on my forehead, feeling a little sick. I inhaled deeply, trying to calm myself. Celeste met me halfway, swinging her branch with each step. "What's wrong?" "Nothing. Just not feeling well, I guess." "Do not puke," she ordered, "especially not on me." "I won't throw up," I assured her. "Who threw up?" Chris asked, joining the conversation, and Elise followed behind her. "No one," I said. "I'm just tired or something." "It won't last too long," Chris reassured me. "It'll last forever," I thought. I looked at each of their faces. They'd come to my side just now. Wouldn't I have done the same for them? Maybe. "Do any of you actually feel good about doing this?" I asked. They all looked at one another or the floor, but no one answered. "Then let's not do it," I urged. "Not do it?" Chris questioned. "America, it's tradition. We have to." "No, we don't. Not if we all decide not to." "What would we do, refuse to walk in there?" Celeste asked. "That's one option," I offered. "You want us to sit in there and do nothing?" Elise sounded appalled. "I hadn't thought it through. I just know I don't think this is a good idea." I could see that Chris was genuinely considering it. "It's a trick," Elise accused. "What?" How could she come to that conclusion? "She's going last. If we all do nothing and then she follows through, she looks obedient, while the rest of us look like idiots." Elise shook her branch at me as she spoke. "America?" Chris looked at me, disappointment filling her eyes. "No, I swear that's not what I was going to do." "Ladies?" We all turned toward Sylvia's correcting tone. "I understand that you're nervous, but that's no reason to shout." Her gaze hit each of us, and we all exchanged looks as they decided whether to go in on this with me. "All right," Sylvia began. "Elise, you'll be first, just as we practiced. Celeste and Chris, you will follow, and America, you'll be last. One at a time, carry your branch up the red carpet and place it at the feet of the king. Then come back and take your seat. The king will say a few words and the ceremony will start." She stepped over to what looked like a small box on a stand and turned it around to show a television monitor with a view of everything happening inside the great room. It was magnificent. Red carpeting divided the room into the seats for the press and guests, and the four seats delegated for us. In the back of the space, the throne sat, waiting for the royal family. As we watched, the side door to the great room opened, and the king, the queen, and Maxon came in to applause and trumpeting fanfare. Once they were seated, a slower, more dignified melody started playing. "There it is, now head high," Sylvia instructed. Elise gave me a pointed look and strode around the corner. The music was dotted by the sound of hundreds of cameras taking her picture. It made for a strange rhythm section. She did great, though, as we could all see on the monitor Sylvia was watching. Celeste followed, straightening her hair before she laughed. Chris's smile looked absolutely genuine and natural as she paraded down the aisle. "America," Sylvia whispered, "your turn." I tried to wipe the worry off my face and focus on positive things, but I realized there weren't any. I was about to kill a part of myself by punishing someone beyond what I thought was deserved, and give the king something he wanted in a neat, short stroke. The cameras clicked, the bulbs flashed, and people whispered their praises to one another as I walked quietly toward the royal family. I made eye contact with Maxon, who was the picture of calm.
Was that his years of discipline, or true happiness coming through? His face was reassuring, but I was certain he could see the anxiety in my gaze. I saw my open spot for the olive branch, and curtsied before placing my offering at the king's feet, deliberately looking at anything in the room other than him. As soon as I was in my place, the music came to a perfectly calculated stop. King Clarkson walked forward, standing on the edge of his stage, the circle of branches at his feet.
"Ladies and gentlemen of Ilia, today the final four beautiful young women of the selection come before us all to present themselves to the law. Our great laws are what hold our nation together, the foundation for the peace we've so long enjoyed."
Peace, I thought. Are you kidding?
"One of these young ladies will stand before you soon, no longer a commoner, but a princess. And as a member of the royal family, it will be her job to hold on to what is right, not for her own benefit, but for yours."
And how am I doing that now?
"Please join me in applauding their humility, in their submission to the law, and their bravery in upholding it."
The king started clapping, and the room joined him. The applause continued as he stepped away, and I glanced down the row of girls. The only face I could really see was Chris's. She shrugged and gave me a half-smile before facing forward again and raising herself to her full height. A guard by the door trumpeted into the room.
"We call into the presence of His Majesty King Clarkson, Her Majesty Queen Amberley, and His Royal Highness Prince Maxon, the criminal, Jacob Digger."
Slowly, no doubt embarrassed by the spectacle, Jacob walked into the great room. His wrists were in handcuffs, and he flinched at the camera's lights and went skittishly to bow in front of Elise. I couldn't see her very well without leaning too far forward, so I turned slightly and listened as she spoke the lines we all would in turn.
"Jacob, what is your crime?" she asked.
She projected her voice really well, much better than usual.
"Theft, my lady,"
he answered meekly. "And how long is your sentence?"
12 years, my lady."
Slowly, not drawing attention to herself, Chris looked my way. With hardly a change in her expression, she questioned what was happening. I nodded. Small crimes of theft, we'd been told. If that was true, then this man would have been beaten in his town square. Or if he had been put in prison, it would have been for 2 or 3 years at the most. In two words, Jacob confirmed all my fears. Subtly, I turned my eyes toward the king. There was no mistaking his pleasure. Whoever this man was, he wasn't just some thief. The king was delighting in his downfall. Elise stood and walked down to Jacob, placing her hand on his shoulder. He hadn't truly looked her in the eye until that moment.
"Go, faithful subject, and pay your debt to the king."
Her voice rang out in the quiet of the room. Jacob nodded his head. He looked at the king, and I could see he wanted to do something. He wanted to fight or make an accusation, but he didn't. No doubt someone else would pay for any mistakes he made today. Jacob stood and exited the room as the audience applauded. The next man had difficulty moving. As he turned to make his way down the carpet toward Celeste, he doubled over and fell. A collective gasp came from the room, but before he could garner too much sympathy, two guards came and walked him to Celeste. To her credit, her voice wasn't as sure as it usually was, as she ordered the man to pay his debt. Chris looked as steady as ever until her criminal got closer. He was younger, probably around our age, and his steps were steady, almost determined. When he turned up the carpet to Chris, I saw a tattoo on his neck. It looked like a cross, though it seemed as if whoever had done it messed up a bit. Chris delivered her lines well. Anyone who didn't know her wouldn't be able to read the hint of regret in her voice. The room applauded, and she sat back down, her smile only slightly less bright than it usually was. The guard yelled out the name Adam Carver, and I realized it was my turn. Adam. Adam, Adam. I needed to remember his name. Because I had to do this now, right? The other girls had. Maxon might forgive me if I failed, and the king would never like me either way, but I would certainly lose the queen, and that backed me into a corner.
If I wanted a chance at all, I needed to deliver. Adam was older, maybe my dad's age, and there was something wrong with his leg. He didn't fall, but it took him so long to reach me that it made the whole thing that much worse. I just wanted it to be done. As Adam knelt in front of me, I focused on the few lines I needed to deliver. "Adam, what is your crime?" I asked.
"Theft, my lady."
"And how long is your sentence?" Adam cleared his throat.
"Life,"
he squeaked out. Around the room, murmurs began, as people were sure they hadn't heard that right. Though I hated to deviate from my lines, I too needed confirmation. "How long did you say?"
"Life, my lady."
It was apparent in Adam's voice that he was on the verge of tears. I peeked over at Maxon. He looked uncomfortable. Wordlessly, I pleaded for help. His eyes conveyed how sorry he was that he couldn't guide me. As I was about to focus again on Adam, my eyes flickered to the king, who had quickly shifted his weight. I watched him run his hand across his mouth in an effort to hide his smile. He'd set me up. Perhaps he suspected I would hate this part of the selection and planned to do what he could to make me look disobedient. But even if I went through with it, what kind of person was I to put a man in prison forever? No one would love me now. "Adam," I said softly. He looked up at me, tears threatening to fall at any moment. I noticed quickly that every whisper in the room ceased. "How much did you steal?" People were trying to hear, but it was impossible. He swallowed and darted his eyes toward the king.
"Some clothes for my girls."
I spoke quickly. "But this isn't about that, is it?" In a gesture so minute I almost missed it, Adam shook his head once. So I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But I had to do something. The idea hit me so quickly, and I was positive it was our only way out. I wasn't sure if it would gain Adam his freedom, and I tried not to think of how sad it would make me. It was simply right, and I had to do it. I stood and made my way to Adam, touching him on the shoulder. He winced, waiting for me to tell him he was going to prison. "Stand up," I said. Adam looked at me, confusion in his eyes. "Please," I said, and took one of his cuffed hands to pull him along. Adam walked with me up the aisle to the raised area where the royal family sat. When we got to the stairs, I turned to him and sighed. I took off one of the beautiful earrings that Maxon had given me, then the other. I placed both in Adam's hands, and he stood there dumbstruck as my beautiful bracelet followed. And then, because if I was truly going to do this, I wanted to give everything, I reached behind my neck and unclasped my songbird necklace, the one my dad had given me. I hoped he was watching and not hating me for giving his gift away. Once I dropped it into Adam's hand, I curled his fingers around the treasures, then stepped to the side so that he was standing directly in front of King Clarkson. I pointed toward the thrones. "Go, faithful subject, and pay your debt to the king." There were gasps and murmurs around the room, but I ignored them. All I could see was the sour expression on the king's face. If he wanted to play a game with my character, then I was prepared to answer in turn. Adam slowly climbed the steps, and I could see both the joy and fear in his eyes. As he approached the king, he fell to his knees and held out his hands full of jewels. King Clarkson shot me a glance, letting me know this wouldn't be the end of it, but then reached out and took the jewelry out of Adam's hands. The crowd erupted, but when I looked back, the other girls had mixed reactions on their faces. Adam backed away from the king quickly, perhaps afraid he'd change his mind. My hope was that with so many cameras going and so many people writing articles about this, someone would follow up and make sure he made it home. When Adam got back to my level, he tried to hug me, even with the handcuffs on. He cried and blessed me and went from the room looking like the happiest soul on earth. Chapter 20. The royal family exited out the side door, and the other elite and I left the way we'd come as the cameras and guests filmed and applauded. Sylvia's eyes when we came out the doorway were positively deadly.
It looked like it was taking every last bit of strength she had to keep from throttling me. She led us around the corner to a small parlor. "In," she ordered, as if anything more would push her past the brink. She shut the doors, not bothering to join us. "Do you always have to be the center of attention?" Elise snapped. "I didn't do anything except what I tried to ask you to do. You were the one who didn't believe me. You act like such a saint. They were criminals. We weren't doing anything a magistrate wouldn't do. We just did it in pretty dresses. Elise, did you see those men? Some of them were sick, and the sentences for their crimes were way too long," I implored. "She's right," Chris said. "Life for theft? Unless he carted the palace away, what could he have possibly taken to deserve that?" "Nothing," I vowed. "He took clothes for his family. Look, you guys are lucky. You were born into better castes. If you're in the lower ones and you lose your main provider, things don't go well. I couldn't send him to jail for life and at the same time sentence his family to becoming AIDS. I couldn't." "Where is your pride, America?" Elise begged. "Where is your sense of duty or honor? You're just a girl. You aren't even the princess. And if you were, you wouldn't be allowed to make decisions like that. You are here to follow the king's rules, and you have never done that, not even from the first night." "Maybe the rules are wrong," I screamed, at perhaps the worst time possible. The doors were flung open, and King Clarkson stormed in, while Queen Amberley and Maxon stood in the hall. He grabbed my arm hard, thankfully not my injured one, and dragged me out of the room. "Where are you taking me?" I asked, fear making my breath come out in short bursts. He didn't answer. I looked over my shoulder at the girls as the king pulled me down the hall. Celeste wrapped her arms around herself, and Elise reached for Chris's hand. For as upset as she was, Elise didn't seem happy to see me go. "Clarkson, don't act in haste," the queen urged quietly. We rounded a corner and I was forced into a room. The queen and Maxon filed in behind us as the king shoved me toward a small couch. "Sit," he commanded unnecessarily. He paced the floor, a lion in a cage. When he stopped, he faced Maxon. "You swore," he bellowed. "You said she was under control. First the outburst on the report, then you nearly get yourself killed on the roof, and now this? It ends today, Maxon." "Father, did you hear the cheers? People appreciate her sympathy. She's your greatest asset right now." "I beg your pardon?" His voice was an iceberg, slow and deadly. Maxon paused a moment at the chill, but continued. "When she suggested the people defend themselves, the public responded positively. I dare say the reason more people aren't dead is because of her. And this? Father, I couldn't put a man in jail for life over what was supposed to be a petty crime. How can you expect that from someone who's probably seen more than her fair share of friends beaten for less? She's refreshing. The majority of the population is in the lower castes, and they relate to her." The king shook his head and started walking again. "I let her stay because she kept you alive. You are my most valuable asset, not her. If we lose you, we lose everything. And I don't just mean through death. If you aren't committed to this life, if you lose your focus, this will all fall apart." He waved his arms at the wide room, letting the silence hang. "You're being brainwashed," the king accused. "You change a little every day. These girls, this one more than the others, are all useless."
"Clarkson, perhaps..."
He silenced the queen with a look, and whatever her opinion was fell away. The king turned back to Maxon.
"I have a proposition for you." "I'm not interested," he shot back.
King Clarkson raised his arms in front of him, gesturing that he meant no harm.
"Hear me out."
Maxon sighed.
"These girls have been disastrous. Even the Asians' connections have done nothing for me. The two is too concerned with fame, and the other, well, she's not entirely hopeless, but not good enough if you ask me. This one," he said, pointing at me, "whatever value she's had has been completely overshadowed by her inability to contain herself. This has all gone terribly wrong. And I know you. I know you're afraid of missing something. So this is my thought.
I watch the king walk around Maxon.
Let's call this off. Let's get rid of all the girls.
Maxon opened his mouth to protest, but the king held up a hand.
I'm not suggesting you stay single. I'm simply saying that we still have the entries of all the eligible girls in the country sitting around somewhere. Wouldn't it be nice if you got to hand-pick a few girls to come to the palace? Maybe find one who looks like the French king's daughter? Remember how fond you were of her?
I lowered my eyes. Maxon had never mentioned a French girl. It genuinely felt as if someone took a chisel and chipped a crack in my heart.
Father, I couldn't. Oh, but you could. You're the prince, and I think we've had enough outbursts that could deem this lot unfit. You could have a real choice this time.
I looked up again. Maxon's eyes were focused on the floor. I could see he was struggling.
This might even appease the rebels temporarily. Think of that, the king added. If we send these girls home, wait a few months like we're calling off the selection, and then bring in a new group of lovely, educated, pleasant women, that could change a lot of things.
Maxon tried to say something, but only closed his mouth again.
Either way, you should ask yourself if that, he said, pointing to me again, is someone you could really spend your life with. Dramatic, selfish, money-hungry, and to be quite honest, very plain. Look at her, son.
Maxon's eyes darted down to mine, holding them for a second before I had to turn away from humiliation.
I'll give you a few days. For now, there's the press to deal with. Amberly?
The queen scurried over, placing her arm through the king's, leaving us alone and speechless. After a short pause, Maxon came to help me stand up. Thanks. Maxon only nodded.
I should probably go with them. No doubt they'll have questions for me as well.
That's a pretty nice offer, I commented.
Maybe the most generous one he's ever made.
I didn't want to know if he was seriously considering this. There was nothing else to say, so I made my way past him, taking the back route to my room, hoping to outrun everything I was feeling. My maids informed me that dinner would be on our own tonight, and when I couldn't be bothered to communicate with them, they graciously excused themselves. I lay on my bed, lost in my thoughts. I'd done the right thing today, hadn't I? I believed in justice, but the convicting wasn't justice. Still, I kept wondering if I'd actually accomplished anything. If that man was an enemy to the king somehow, which I had to believe he was, then surely he would be punished in some other way. Was it all for nothing? And as frivolous as it was when I considered everything else going on, I couldn't stop thinking about this French girl. Why hadn't Maxon mentioned her? Was she here a lot? Why would he keep her a secret? I heard the knock and assumed it was my food, even though it seemed a little early. Come in, I called, not wanting to get out of bed. The door opened, and Celeste's dark hair swished into view. In the mood for some company? She asked. Chris peeked in behind her, and I saw the edge of Elise's arm hiding in the back. I sat up. Sure. They ambled in, leaving the door open. Celeste, still shocking me every time she smiled so genuinely.